Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the BCE Third Quarter 2017 Results Conference Call. I would like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Thane Fotopoulos. Please go ahead, Mr. Fotopoulos.
Thank you, Donna. Good morning to all, and thanks for joining us. I'm here with BCE's President and CEO, George Cope, and our CFO, Glen LeBlanc. As a reminder, our third quarter results package and other disclosure documents, including today's slide presentation, are available on BCE's Investor Relations webpage. An audio replay and transcript of the call will also be made available on our website later today or tomorrow. As usual, before we get started, I'd like to draw your attention to our safe harbor statement on slide two. Information in this presentation and remarks made by the speakers today will contain statements about expected future events and financial results that are forward-looking and therefore subject to risks and uncertainties. These forward-looking statements represent our expectations as of today and accordingly are subject to change. Results could differ materially. We disclaim any obligation to update forward-looking statements except as required by law. Factors that may affect future results are contained in BCE's filings with both the Canadian Securities Commission and the SEC and are also available on our corporate website. With that, I'll turn the call over to George.
Great. Thanks, Thane. Good morning, everyone. Clearly, we're very pleased this morning with the financial growth and the subscriber growth in the quarter, driven by the 5.9% service revenue growth, producing 5.8% higher EBITDA in the quarter, and also seeing a margin increase across all of BCE consolidated to 41.7%. Of interest, on 270 million of approximate revenue growth, we saw 130 million dollar flow-through of EBITDA, so about a 48% flow-through across the entire company on incremental revenue. Wireless, again, had an excellent quarter, and we believe will, as the quarter unfolds, end up being the leader from an adjusted EBITDA growth perspective and cash flow perspective in the quarter. We had strong internet and IPTV net adds up 6.9% and 81,000 in the quarter and one of our strongest quarters in a number of years. Wireline EBITDA growth of 4.4%. Of course, part of that contributing from the MTS acquisition, but also seeing the margin expansion there to 42.3%, giving us the headroom for our continued capital program. And as I mentioned in the past, I would believe over the next 12 months, the consolidated MTS results with the synergies within that particular division will see about a 10% margin improvement as a result of our synergies. We had steady media financial performance with 1% revenue growth and stable adjusted EBITDA. And overall, 198,000 postpaid wireless internet and IPTV net customer additions, up 8.3% year-over-year, clearly a very strong RGU quarter. Turning to wireless, it was our best postpaid performance in the past 5 years with 117,000 postpaid net adds. We continue to see our churn reduce as a result of our network quality and the continued focus from a service perspective with our customers. We also, again, saw an increase in average revenue per customer this quarter, up 3% year-over-year, to a blended 69.78, and we also saw an increase in usage as we continue to see as people use our broadband network more and more, with our overall base increase of usage of 26% on a year-over-year basis. One highlight of the quarter, I think already reported in a number of different areas, was our win of the federal government wireless contract. That should add an additional 200,000 postpaid subscribers to our customer base over the next 18 months. That's about a 1% market share swing in our favor with our largest competitor. It provides a 6-year agreement with some extension possibilities for 10 years. Also, some of the other benefits, it provides us the opportunity for the mobile push-to-talk business there and other IoT solutions. It's an interesting account for us strategically. Clearly a lower ARPU account, but also clearly an account with literally no churn. And as the public sector growth of employment takes place in Canada, of course, that subscriber growth that we would expect to be greater than these number of subs over the term of the contract. Turning to our wireless network, we do like to call this out on a quarterly basis because we think it's making quite a difference and will over time. We think we specifically see it in our industry-leading ARPU. A significant milestone for Canada this quarter, we have 99% of the country covered with speeds of up to 150 megabits on LTE. The industry has never been beyond 97%, even with traditional technologies before. So we almost have this entire country now covered from a broadband perspective with those speeds. Recent reports have come out to show that our wireless network is approximately now 2 times faster than our largest incumbent provider. And this is, of course, our utilization of the 4CCA quad band technologies that has allowed us now to have an approximately 8 provinces and 21% of the population has access now to speeds of up to 750 megabits. We would expect in 2018 over 50% of Canadians will actually have access to speeds of over 900 megabits and will, on a normal basis, those customers would see a practical speed of about 250 on their handset. Clearly world-class, probably world-leading in terms of wireless speeds, and we think a great differentiator over our number one competitor. And, of course, you have to have the fiber backhaul to those cell sites to see the benefit of these speeds, and as everyone on the call knows, we've made those investments, and that assures as we make this evolution, we'll see that speed continue. We've also very quickly accelerated growth in Manitoba. We've now completed the overlay of LTE Advanced in Manitoba to 85% of the province, so that's in our capital already. And that starts to put that network at the level of quality that we have across the rest of the country on the Bell network. We're particularly proud from a leadership perspective to be the only wireless carrier in Canada who enabled and supported the Apple Watch Series 3 launch, enabling me to actually use the Apple Watch when you're away from your smartphone. And to our knowledge at this point, we're the only wireless carrier in Canada with that capability, which is some nice differentiation going into the holiday season. We've been able to do these network investments while maintaining our capital intensity at 9%. We'll talk more about guidance in 18, but as we're evolving the business plan, we're pretty comfortable now with the street to let you know that we would expect our capital intensity in 18 on wireless should be approximately around 9% as well, particularly because we've made these investments to give us these speed advantages, and we think that's going to give us quite a great position going forward in terms of the capital intensity of wireless for 2018. Turning to wireline, an excellent quarter from an RGU perspective. Really nice to see the growth acceleration, 44,000 internet net adds, up almost 13% year over year. So our fiber footprint obviously beginning to provide the returns we want to see. Really positive quarter from a TV perspective. 10,000 positive net adds in our wireline footprint, which, of course, as everyone knows now, runs from Manitoba to the East Coast. So that's a very positive outcome for us. Strong IPTV net adds also assisted with the launch of our Alt TV product, which continues to do early on what we hope it would do in the marketplace. And the other thing I just wanted to call out was really the very strong local access line results. Dramatic improvement from residential perspective, down 23,000 in terms of the losses year over year, and 10,000 less losses on the business perspective, where we saw small business performance continue to improve. And, you know, one interesting milestone, I looked again just a few days ago, but in the quarter, we were actually positive NAS in our fiber footprint. So there's clearly some bundling benefits there. And across the board, all three of these products on ARPU lift year over year of approximately 4%. So it's clearly doing the right things we want, and now it's about keeping that up going forward. In terms of Bell Media, excellent from a ratings perspective. Off to a strong start in the quarter, 7 of the top 10 shows for the important fall season. Excellent specialty programming, as you can see here with some of the names on the page. Also, great start to the NFL in Canada this year with the average audiences on Sunday up 53%, Monday up 18%, and new to TSN was carrying the NFL on Thursday night and up 12% year over year. We did just recently announce the intended acquisition of 2 specialty services in the province of Quebec. Those are subject to regulatory approval, but would, of course, improve our overall position in the province against our competitor there. And there's no doubt our continued ownership of the Canadians, Maple Leafs, Raptors, and TFC, although not driving cash flow that comes back to the shareholders, is driving significant value for us as we've seen these assets grow in value and also continue to secure some really, really important Canadian content for us. With that, let me turn it over to Glenn.
Thank you, George, and good morning, everyone. Let me begin with a quick high-level summary of our Q3 financial results, which, as George said, we are very pleased with. Service revenue was up a very healthy 5.9% this quarter, reflecting year-over-year increases at Bell Wireless, Bell Wireline, which benefited from another full quarter of contribution from Bell MTS, as well as top-line growth at Bell Media. However, lower margin product revenues decreased $26 million compared to last year, the result of lower wireline business data equipment sales, which, as you know, tend to be variable quarter to quarter. Adjusted EBITDA growth accelerated, increasing to 5.8%, once again benefiting from the inclusion of Bell MTS in our consolidated results. Consistent with growth in EBITDA, margin also improved, expanding 30 basis points to 41.7% on a flow-through of strong wireless service revenue growth, increasing broadband internet scale, fewer NAS line losses that George mentioned earlier, and the Bell MTS integration synergies, as well as some other operating cost efficiencies driven by ongoing service improvements from our growing fiber footprint. Notably, this was all achieved even with the $26 million in year-over-year regulatory impacts absorbed in the quarter from the wholesale internet tariff revisions and the customer cancellation refunds, which are now expected to total $100 million for the full year, up from the preliminary projection of $85 million. With respect to EPS, although absolute dollar net earnings increased year-over-year, statutory and adjusted earnings per share declined 1 and 3 cents respectively to 86 and 88 cents per share as a result of the share dilution from the issuance of BC common shares for our MTS acquisition. And lastly, free cash flow grew a strong 24.4% to approximately $1.2 billion, more than fully supporting higher planned capital spending in the quarter. Let's turn to wireless financials on slide 11. Slide 11 details our Q3 wireless financial results, which exceeded expectations once again this quarter. Service revenue increased 11.2%. This was driven by higher year-over-year postpaid subscriber mix, together with continued strong ARPU growth and a favorable impact of Bell MTS. Product revenue was unchanged year-over-year, despite a higher volume of customer transactions due to competitive pricing on higher-end smartphones sold with subscriptions to premium rate plans, which should help support ARPU and churn performance going forward. Wireless EBITDA was up a strong 9.4%, which I believe will lead all incumbent peers this quarter based on reported results and analyst consensus estimates. This result was achieved even with $74 million in incremental customer retention and acquisition spending driven by contract expirations in the quarter and a higher sales mix of premium mobile devices. As a result, service revenue margin declined year over year in Q3, but remained a very healthy 45.5%. Lastly, in terms of cash generation, Bell Wireless contributed meaningfully to BC's consolidated free cash flow, delivering 14% growth in adjusted EBITDA less CapEx of $685 million, even as we continue to spend significantly on carrier aggregation to further enhance our industry-leading LTE network speeds and small cell deployments to optimize coverage. Signal quality, and data backhaul capacity. Let's move to slide 12, wireline financials. Service revenue in Q3 was up 4.1% year-over-year, reflecting stronger Fibe internet and TV growth, 4.5% higher household ARPU, improved year-over-year business results reflecting the favorable impact of our Q9 acquisition, and another quarter of Bell MTS financial contribution. Similar to the previous quarters this year, wireline revenue growth in Q3 was moderated by the regulatory impacts I mentioned earlier, totaling $21 million in this segment, competitive pricing pressure across our residential business and wholesale markets, as well as $25 million year-over-year decline in the business data product sales. Wireline adjusted EBITDA growth accelerated in the quarter, increasing to 4.4%, driving a 60 basis point improvement in margin to 42.3%, which more than fully supports the continuation of significant broadband fiber investments going forward. Excluding the regulatory impacts, wireline EBITDA was up 6.1%. Turning to media, slide 13, total revenue was up 1% in what is seasonally a low quarter for the media sector. Despite an overall reduction in spending by advertisers and the ongoing shift to online services, advertising revenue increased 1.4% in Q3 on continued growth in outdoor advertising at Astral Out of Home. Conventional and specialty TV revenues were down year over year, reflecting continued market softness and a steady decline in audience levels consistent with broader industry trends. Bell Media also saw steady growth in subscriber revenue, which increased 1.6% in Q3, driven by our Crave TV and TV Everywhere Go streaming products. Adjusted EBITDA remained unchanged year over year as revenue growth was offset by a 1.3% increase in operating costs, attributable mainly to Crave TV and pay TV content expansion, deal renewals for special TV programming and higher costs at Astral Out of Home from the acquisitions and outdoor advertising contract wins over the past year. Let's turn to slide 14. Slide 14 provides the key components of adjusted EPS, which, as I mentioned, was 88 cents per share this quarter, down 3 cents compared to last year. Higher adjusted EBITDA, including Bell MTS contribution, drove 11 cents of EPS growth. This included a non-cash charge against EBITDA totaling 1 cent per share to amortize the fair value increment of the MTS assets required. Tax adjustments also contributed positively to EPS this quarter. Tax recoveries from favorable audit settlements with CRA totaled 7 cents per share compared to 2 cents last year. And this related to a tax provision reversal regarding allowable depreciation on a Nookshook spectrum transferred to Bell in 2012. With the year-to-date tax adjustment of 8 cents per share, up from an earlier assumption of 1 cent per share, we now expect an effective tax rate of approximately 26% for the full year 17, down from our previous expectation of 27%. No material tax adjustments are anticipated in Q4. However, we expect, despite these favorable factors, EPS was negatively impacted in the quarter by MTS's incremental below EBITDA expense contributions, and as I mentioned earlier, 3 cents of dilution from the shares issued for the common equity component of the acquisition. Also contributing to the year-over-year decrease in adjusted EPS was minor losses realized on the retirement and disposal of end-of-life fixed assets, as well as the currency hedge gains from Q3 of 2016 related to our U.S. dollar-denominated expenditures that did not occur this year due to a new hedge accounting process that we implemented in July 1st, whereby the P&L is no longer impacted by mark-to-market changes in FX. Due to the positive tax adjustments in this quarter and with the $2.63 of EPS generated in the first 9 months of the year, we are tracking to the higher end of our guidance range of $3.30 to $3.40 per share. Moving to slide 15, as I already mentioned, we generated close to $1.2 billion of free cash flow this quarter, up 24.4% over last year. This was a result of higher EBITDA, a positive change in working capital, driven mainly by the timing of supplier payments, which will largely reverse out in Q4, and lower cash taxes due to the timing of installment payments and partial utilization of the MTS tax losses. $70 million of the total $300 million in MTS tax loss carryforwards will be monetized in 2017. Higher year-over-year capital spending, which is expected to repeat in Q4, as well as higher cash interest paid due to MTS debenture debt assumed and short-term borrowing to finance the acquisition, moderated the strong increase in free cash flow this quarter. We ended Q3 with $2 billion of cash on the balance sheet, which included the proceeds from the completion of the 1.5 dual tranche public debt offering on September 29th at a blended coupon rate of 3.3%. The net proceeds were used in October to fund the early redemption of 1.3 million of MTN debentures that would have normally matured in 2018, saving BC approximately 16 million in annualized interest payments. This also lowered our weighted average after-tax cost of debt to 3.2% while maintaining an average term to maturity of more than 9 years. And lastly, a quick update on the funded position of our defined benefit pension plan. The Bell Canada DB plan is in the best shape it's been in over 10 years. With a solvency ratio that now stands at over 97%, it would only take a modest 50 basis point increase in rates to see that plan in a fully funded position. I'd like to remind investors that over the last decade, we've put more than $4 billion in voluntary contributions into the plan. So suffice to say that the cash burden is essentially behind us with no further material voluntary pension funding anticipated going forward. To wrap up on slide 16, with three quarters of growth in consolidated financial statements, we see no fundamental changes for the balance of the year. We remain competitively well-positioned, and our operating momentum is positive across our wireless and residential wireline businesses as we enter the fourth quarter. Bell MTS is meeting our expectations in terms of overall performance and contribution to BCE consolidated results, and our focus continues to be on execution excellence to capture incremental growth and cost opportunities across the company. Given this outlook, I am reconfirming all of our 2017 guidance targets. And with that, I'll turn the call back to Thane and the operator to begin the Q&A portion of the call.
Thanks, Glenn. So before we do get started, to keep the call as efficient as possible, please, I'd ask you that if you limit yourselves to one question and a brief follow-up so we can get to everybody in the queue. So with that, Donna, we're ready to take our first question.
Thank you. We'll now take questions from the telephone lines. If you have a question and using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before making your selection. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. To cancel the question, please press the pound sign. Please press star 1 at this time if you have a question. There will be a brief pause while participants register. Thank you for your patience. And the first question is from Philip Huang from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Yes, thanks. Good morning. First question on the fixed line business. Obviously, a very strong set of subscriber numbers. Improvements across the board. Wanted to better understand the drivers behind this beat and the sustainability of the strength. You know, are you seeing the greatest improvement in Toronto, where obviously your fiber investment has been focused? And do you see this as sort of the new normal for the fixed line business?
Yeah, thanks for the good morning and thank you. Yeah, it was a very strong quarter. All the metrics that we produced, we're consistent with it being extremely strong where we have fiber deployed. And, of course, that goes beyond Toronto. But the Toronto footprint is starting to have an impact in our results because we're starting to get to a material number of homes and businesses covered. I think that's been positive. I also think our creative approach to the TV market, having a product that's alt TV and our IPTV product, is clearly helping us from an Internet perspective and TV perspective as it allows us to focus in the specifically the condo marketplace where, there may have been cord cutters, and that's a market we're now focused on. I think that adds to the results as well. And, of course, results going forward will really answer your longer-term question. But clearly we're very encouraged by the quarter and the results we want to see, and it's nice to be in the position to report them.
Thanks for that. In Toronto in particular, when you're, rolling out fiber in a particular neighborhood, obviously the result came as a surprise for us. But in terms of the results and response to the consumers that you're getting, is that sort of in line with plan, or do you see that as sort of better than, what you were expecting in terms of the market's response? And if I could squeeze in a second one, regarding on the wireless side, the discount segment, Rogers has Chatter and TELUS has Public Mobile, as their third brand to address the value segment. Was wondering what your views are of the discount wireless segment. Could we see, maybe BC address the that segment perhaps more fully going forward? Thanks.
On the second point, there's clearly some growth in the prepaid segment. That is in the midst of going on, and as you, the words you used in terms of that segment. We are looking at that segment. I think I mentioned that last quarter as well. I think to investors, stay tuned in terms of what we do in the marketplace there to make sure if there's any space that we're not participating in proportionally, we have to look at that And although it's a very low revenue space, it's one we want to make sure distribution-wise we're maintaining our right share. So I think you'll see something from us in the future in that space. Stay tuned on that. And in terms of the results, you know, I would say there's no doubt we're adding, as we add the fiber footprint, the product is undoubted. There is no other broadband service like it. And frankly, we see the lower churn and our cost happening as we would have expected them to be. But I do think, you know, we get pull through from our TV product and Alt TV product, and both those products were very strong in the quarter. And so it's the combination of the two. And as I said, and it is a hard one, I think, for analysts, even for us to give guidance on this morning, the one area we were probably taken back for as well is just how strong the NAS numbers were and the decline in losses we saw year over year. And, of course, if any of that type of momentum continued, that would be a bonus for sure going forward, because certainly is beyond our expectations and obviously the investment community as well this morning.
Thanks, George.
Thank you. The next question is from Simon Flannery from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Great. Thank you very much. Good morning. George, any perspective on this iPhone cycle? I think there's a lot of expectation that given that it's the big new first form factor change in 3 years, the pre-orders, I think Apple said, were off the charts. So what are you seeing in terms of the 8, in terms of interest in the 10 and inventory, and any comments on the watch take-up so far would be great. Thank you.
I think from our perspective, it's really early. The product's just, as you know, we're just entering the marketplace. And so it's always a highly competitive market in Q4 in Canada, and having a new product in the market, quite frankly, couldn't be more exciting for us. But we're going to have to stay tuned and see those results unfold. And obviously, we'll have a lot more to say, and I apologize, but a lot more to say around that on the next call.
Anything on the watch?
On the watch, it's great differentiation for us, and clearly, customers who want their smartphone paired with the watch in Canada and be able to use it when they're away from the smartphone. There only is one carrier you can utilize today because of our technology differentiation, and we are definitely taking advantage of that in the marketplace and leveraging that in the market right now. And so, you know, it would be up to Apple to talk about watch sales in Canada, not us. But whatever is being sold, you can assume that we're doing pretty well from a subscriber perspective on what that share would be. But I'll let them comment on the sales. That's only fair to them.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Vince Valentini from TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks very much. Let's go back to the wireline. Given the strength you're seeing in the fiber to the home footprint, George, any updated thoughts on where you go next after the GTA is done? I know you've said Montreal, but is Montreal it, or does it make sense to accelerate into some of the suburbs around Toronto as well, given how well you're doing? And can I just tag on Alt TV? I mean, you're including that as normal IPTV subscribers, even though they're clearly lower ARPU. Can you give us any sense, was that a big portion of your sub ads this quarter, or is it relatively small? Thanks.
Yeah, on the first one, the answer is yes, we will be accelerating our broadband investments beyond Montreal and into the word you use, suburban communities. We'll become very clear on that in the first quarter of 2018, but I don't think any of our announcements should not be any surprise to investors that we've been pretty clear on, you know, trying to get to a run rate that, you know, hopefully gets us into the 650, the 750, maybe in that range of fiber additions every year, and just keep on that. So clearly, as Toronto not winds down, but certainly is not as much next year, we'll take that to other footprints, and we'll talk about that then. In terms of the Alt TV, it had actually a good start for us. Is it like a majority of our net adds? No, of course not. But, you know, just to remind investors, yeah, you're right. It is like packaging the product. It is at a different price. It can be anywhere from $10, $15 lower than our traditional TV product. And, of course, but there's no set-top box and there's no truck roll. And so, you know, our focus on this is to make ourselves as close to margin neutral, yet pass the entire savings on to the consumer. And I think what that, you know, is particularly interesting for us in Canada, you know, it does make me bring it up. I mean, you know, we've got TV bills in Canada running around $60 Canadian. That would be, I think, versus the U.S. in U.S. dollars. We see reports of anywhere to 80 or 90. And we now have a product that's not set-top box driven that puts you in a $45 to $55 Canadian price point. And we think that positions us extremely well against anyone who would model streaming services in Canada from a price competitive perspective, yet we think we can be margin neutral on it. And, of course, we think it can also help drive broadband investment return for fiber for our shareholders.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Aravinda Galapathy from Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my question. Just going back to the wireline side a little bit. Obviously, the last 6 months, there seems to be at least a relative step down in terms of sort of the level of promotional activity, including from your competitors. I was wondering what your outlook is from that perspective and how that could potentially translate to sort of improved margins on the wireline side. Thanks.
Well, I think, you know, I think our margin improvement is truly coming from our cost synergy that our cost management, I think, has become a bit of a hallmark of us over the last decade in terms of being able to integrate organizations in and put the same cost structure across the entire company and therefore see some margin expansion. In terms of competitive intensity, I mean, our focus is on the product differentiation that we have. There's some pretty unique stuff from us in the last 6 months, Alt TV being brand new to the Canadian marketplace, Virgin Internet being new to the Canadian marketplace from us, and now an extended fiber footprint. And so packaging probably with better products from our perspective than we've ever had against our peers. We think that's helping to drive, you know, some of the results. And also, you know, there were promotions in the marketplace, you know, a year and a half ago that I would say arguably were longer periods of discounts on signups than we may be seeing today. And ultimately that, and we didn't match all those, as people may recall, a year ago. So that may be part of the reason for some of our results as well. I think it would be, to say nothing on that would be not really being clear to your question.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Batya Levy from UBS. Please go ahead.
Great. Thank you. On wireless side, I think you had mentioned that capital intensity would have been around 10% for the year, looking a bit lower. Can you talk about what's driving that? Is it mostly timing? And over the next few years, as you think about 5G, where do you think that capital intensity could go? And would it make sense to extend your network sharing agreement to fiber connectivity as well to improve profitability? Thank you.
Okay. Let me take each one of them. The first one, just capital intensity, you're right. I think I did mention this year we'll probably be closer to 9%. That's actually just driven by the fact that I think our revenue in wireless has exceeded our own and the street's expectation, you know, overall. So that's given us some headroom there. But I did mention, I want to make sure I'm clear, that we also would expect in 2018, we're pretty comfortable now with analysts running our wireless business next year at around 9% capital intensity as well. And I think that's significant because I think everyone knows who follows closely, the math is wireless is a bigger share of our business. So if the intensity there comes down, it allows us to even accelerate fiber further, yet stay within our capital intensity envelope that people have come to know, you know, in the 17 and a half-ish type of C to I. The second question was, on 5G. Remember, again, just to go back to 5G, you know, very distinct marketplaces. There's what we would consider fixed wireless 5G, which we think is a lot of what is being early on rolled out in the United States. And then there's mobile 5G, which we think is a 2021-22 true development, and that's when you would see us making those investments. What happens to capital intensity? We would have to, of course, see them. But remember, we've already done fiber backhaul to our cell sites. We're underlaying fiber in every major city we compete in with our wireless footprint that we're responsible for in our network sharing agreement. And so all those locations will have fiber already there. And, you know, how you amortize that against our two business units, I think it's one of the benefits of our vertical integration of wireless and wireline. And, of course, our network sharing agreement, it doesn't address what you're talking about, but, of course, in our network sharing agreement, we utilize the other carrier's network. And so if they put fiber to those cell sites, by definition, we see a benefit of that. And I think that's been the strategy of that competitor in their markets because they're in the midst of a very aggressive wireline fiber deployment as well, quite consistent with what Bell's doing in its footprint.
Okay,
so in essence,
thank you.
In essence, you get that benefit.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Jeff Fan from Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning. Just back to the fiber question. George, you mentioned ARPU lift of 4%. Just wondering if you can give us a little bit of context as to whether you're referring to 4% over the entire base, over your non-fiber footprint. Just wondering if you can just give us some context
sure,
there.
Yeah, it's over the entire base.
Okay.
And really, it's customers migrating, of course, to fiber rate plans, and that's really across the board that we're seeing. And there's no doubt. I mean, I think we've been pretty transparent that in our fiber footprint, it's very positive net adds overall RGUs. I mean, if we're flat NAS in the fiber footprint, we're clearly pretty positive RGU there. In the fiber to the node footprint, it's a battle every quarter, but we're competing well and using bonding. And where we clearly have the pressure is in the footprint, that last 25%, and that's clearly the area where we're probably not seeing the accretion in ARPU, but the overall mix is growing.
And have you seen that ARPU lift of 4%? Has that improved from, say, if you benchmark it to 6 months, 12 months, just in a historical period so that we can get
a sense? No, I don't think that's been a significant change. I just was trying to draw out, for investors that our quarter, I think, was driven on product differentiation that we now have in the marketplace and not something we did in any way to, as people would use the term, buy market share. That's not really, as people have followed us the last 2 years, not really a strategy of ours. And so I think we're just seeing the investment we're making is so significant we can't actually play in that other type of arena.
Right. If I can just squeeze in a quick one on the media side, your announcement a few weeks ago of announcing two channels in the French market, I guess if you can just lay out the case for buying something that I guess the regulators had forced you to sell in the Astral deal, wondering if we should be looking at this a little bit differently if there's anything changed in the industry that you think can support that deal.
Well, I think we've made the acquisition because we do, and I think I know you would agree too. I think everyone would agree the media business from what we were doing 4 or 5 years ago, maybe the most dramatically changed industry that we've all seen in our space. So the amount of change in that space, I think, in the market share calculations now would clearly support our position to be able to acquire this asset. And if we had been at these market shares from a consolidated basis with these other services that are out there, then I think the transaction would have not caused a divestiture. So we think we meet those requirements, but of course that'll be up to our regulator, and we'll unfold that strategy with them in the coming months. But based on where we are and what we understand the current rules would be, we're pretty comfortable, and hopefully this will move forward and close. So it's quite a change from a few years ago.
Thanks, George.
Thank you. The next question is from Richard Cho from J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
Great, thank you. Do you feel like you're at past the tipping point on the wireline side in terms of the fiber build, and it's a little earlier than you had expected, and you could press your advantage as the build kind of continues going forward?
I think we're going to have to see as we unfold. Our competitor has, as we know, some of their products coming next year, and our goal has been to make sure our fiber position in Toronto is established with a significant enough footprint to mass advertise that footprint. That's the one thing we've not yet been able to do in core Toronto, and we expect to be in a position to do that early in first quarter next year, and hopefully that will give us some of these true benefits in that particular market. And then, of course, we are adding 150,000 new households and businesses every quarter to our footprint from fiber, and we know when we launch it helps us. So, and then, of course, there's always seasonality. Back to school helps us, especially when you have a product like Alt TV, and that's historically cued. This quarter's been strong across the entire industry, and I think we saw that in these results.
And, we're reaching critical mass now, Richard, with 3.7 million homes now covered with our fiber to the prem product, and that's 40% of our ultimate objective, and as George said earlier, 650, 750 a year. It's starting to become a substantive piece of our footprint.
And a quick follow-up on the wireline side, the EBITDA is accelerating in terms of growth, and X the CRTC would be even higher than the 4.4% at 6. Where should we expect that to go going forward?
I think we're going to give you that answer in the first quarter. Obviously, when we give our guidance for next year, we will lap, as everyone knows, after the first quarter MTS. But the positive thing is, I think, in fairness, we are lapping the regulatory issue as well. So now it's about us, you know, performing it on that asset going forward as well. So we're going to have to give you guys that guidance, I think, in the first quarter. But, you know, at this point, obviously, that's pretty strong underpinning wireline growth when you take that particular regulatory issue into account, which, quite frankly, wasn't even focused on until Glenn had mentioned it in his call this morning.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Greg McDonald from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, guys. Other carriers, George, are talking about relatively tepid demand for the iPhone 8 and talking about demand being spread over 4Q and 1Q. I wonder if you can just give us your thoughts on demand for the 8 and then early thoughts on the 10 or the X, I guess, as the non-Roman numeral enthusiasts among us refer to it as. Thanks.
Yeah, look, I think as I said, it's fourth quarter. We love having new product for a fourth quarter. We love having the differentiation of the watch. I'm going to frustrate with my answer, but obviously I'm going to leave suppliers of handsets to talk about their handset volumes, not us. And so we'll see how that unfolds. And we're just happy to have their products for the fourth quarter. And so it create a lot of excitement and a lot of traffic in a very important selling season with a lot of advertising support. And I think that bodes well for the Canadian wireless industry. And let's see what happens.
Okay, if I can then just follow with another one.
Sure.
But FTE, fiber to the home, has been discussed in terms of CapEx benefits and cost benefits. And not a lot has been said about the timing. You know, Glenn just mentioned that you have some critical mass. You've got 40% built now. Can you talk a little bit about whether we should expect either CapEx or OpEx or both benefits to start creeping in? Probably not something that can be quantified relatively near term, but is that something you see in the next couple of years, given what you've built so far, or is that something that only takes place over time?
Well, CapEx, you know, not a lot of benefit because we're continuing to build out the footprint, right? So, I mean, I think there'll be a consistent and there'll be more on the wireline side. But the investors, again, can count on us coming to the street with guidance consistent with previous CapEx intensity next year. And, of course, helped by the fact that, as I said this morning, we think wireless closer to 9 gives us even a little more headroom on the wireline, which is positive. On the cost side, there's no doubt we're starting to see the benefits. We've seen it really most dramatically in the Bell Alliant footprint. We know that as you get a mature fiber footprint, it's less truck rolls, less issues, turns improves. And so our margin expansion this morning, and I think over the last while, helped support that, although I think underpinning that, in fairness, this quarter has probably got more to do with the MTS synergies.
So is it too aggressive then to think of continuous margin improvement, or should we be thinking somewhat flatline given the competitive outlook?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at our margins on a global basis, you know, I think it's up to us to just perform, and then we'll see as we give guidance next year. I think what I would be doing again is taking the capital intensity we've said on the wireless and start to create the models off of that. But you know, this is pretty strong EBITDA margins we're reporting this morning.
Yeah. Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Maher Yaghi from Desjardins Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question. I know, George, you like to manage the business as a whole, and you know, your guidance shows that you give guidance on a consolidated basis. But when I look at just the wireline, and we're looking into 2018. So if I strip out the Q9 acquisition, the CRTC impact, and the MBT acquisition, I'm getting revenues of approximately minus 2% year on year, and EBITDA up 1%, which, you know, shows the strong management in terms of cost control. And you talked about the improved margins of the operations. As an entity, when you look at wireline, are we still aiming for wireline revenues to grow, or are you looking at wireline to manage the EBITDA line and keep growing that line?
Well, look, it is, first of all, and I'll say it in all sincerity, absolutely, we're obviously trying to drive service revenue growth on the wireline perspective. It's all about mix, right? It's all about mix of the amount of local access lines we have in our percent of revenue against the internet and TV and business growth or not. And, you know, I think, as you can see in our results, why I've drawn out the NAS number is that, you know, I don't know if that's a trend yet or not, but it also can have some impacts for us meaningfully on the wireline perspective. And then the other piece, as we've said for 4 or 5 years, costs keep coming out of this business because of fiber, right? And our margin expansion is clearly two things, well, three. One, obviously, synergies of transactions. We know we do that. Two, consumer behavior has changed. They want the solutions online on their smartphone, and we've made significant investments there under John Watson's leadership and seen benefits where call volumes would be stable or down year over year, even as the number of customers grow. And then thirdly, when we put fiber in, it's less truck rolls, and that is one of our most expensive parts of being a wireline carrier. All three of those trends, if you think about it, should continue as the mix continues to improve, and then you have a really competitive marketplace, which will be the offset to that. No one's in our markets, no one's handing anyone market share back, and if our peers were on the line, they'd be telling us why we're not going to be able to do what we're saying. So, you know, that's the competitive market at its best.
Thank you. And just a follow-up question on wireless ARPU. It's always continuing to surprise us on the upside. Can you talk about the drivers there and how sustainable that number could be?
Well, you know, we've been asked this question a lot. I think one of the things we try to draw out every single quarter is the amount of usage increase. It's not about pricing. There's obviously stable pricing in terms of what we're trying to do with the marketplace. But when you see 26% increase in usage year over year, it just proves when you build out speeds like this that I now know everyone on the call knows from a global perspective, there really is no carriers faster. I think one other country might be faster than us in the world. People use it for video. And as the explosion of video takes place, that's what's creating the financials that you're seeing. And, you know, the great benefit, then we get the capital to reinvest in these speed networks, which, of course, is great for the consumer market. What we've told when we get asked this question, you know, modeling it versus what we're seeing, you know, you'd expect this industry to mature out at a CPI type of number. You would think that's what would happen. And we'll just have to see how that unfolds. The surprise of that, of course, is this incredible demand of uses we're seeing from the broadband speeds for video on the handsets.
Great. Thank you. Good job.
Thank you. The next question is from Drew McReynolds from RBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my questions. George, just on the internet market, can you just comment on the impact of internet resellers in the marketplace and some of the dynamics underneath the hood? And just secondly, maybe for you, Glenn, just with respect to no anticipated voluntary pension contributions, you do have certainly significant excess free cash flow after the dividend. Can you just update us on, you know, whether that goes to debt repayment, whether you're interested in a buyback, et cetera? Thank you.
Okay, for the resellers.
Yeah, so on the reseller market, what I would say is it's a competitive market. I would call it generally it's been a price-driven market. And one of our strategies, there was clearly a consumer market for a differentiated brand consumer program, similar to what we did in the wireless industry. And so we launched the Virgin brand, and that is having the proper effect we would want in that space for us. And so that we're probably swinging a little more of our net adds coming from our own discount brand, which is a strategy we wanted. It's addressing the market, and we think that customer in the end will be stickier for us than if it was simply through the wholesale structure. The second one, I'll leave that to Glenn.
Yeah, morning, Drew. Thanks for your question. Yeah, great news. You've heard me talk about pensions for too many years now, and to see us coming out the other side of it, what I believe to be materially, all these voluntary contributions being behind us, it does give us an advantage to look at how we deploy our capital. I've said it many times, it's all about a balanced approach to managing our capital. Great news, the pension's behind us. It gives us the ability to look at strategic investments, strategic acquisitions, to manage paying down our debt and getting back inside of that leverage objective in the next 3 years. As far as share buybacks, I mean, it's not something that we're actively pursuing with our leverage where it's at. And, I mean, as I say, the pension gives us a great opportunity to deploy the capital in what will be a different approach to the future versus having to constantly make these contributions.
Yeah, and the only thing I would add to Glenn's point is I think, you know, you'll see our approach in 2018 will be very consistent again, which is, a strong weighting to a consistent dividend growth, free cash flow story, and the other balance points that Glenn said, largely away from the concept of buybacks, much more towards making sure investors just see the broadband. I think our investors would want us to see quicker fiber deployment, and dividend growth over that next point you've just raised. Not that it's not always a good, healthy debate to have.
So. Okay, that's helpful. If I could just squeeze one quick one in here, just on Bell Media, we've heard Corus talk about ad technology in Canada, whether it's addressable advertising, local ad insertion, programmable advertising. George, can you just update, you know, from Bell Media's standpoint, you know, how you view this technology? We're obviously seeing developments in the U.S. Where does Bell Media stand on that front?
Yeah, we have to play in that space. I think we do fairly well there. We need to do better. There's better targeting opportunities for us. You know, if you look at so many of our different products that we have out there, you know, how we can monetize more advertising dollars through placement with our those that are generous enough to buy the advertising through our organization is some work for us to do and lends itself to an opportunity. Of course, the other thing we're doing to the benefit of Bell Media, and I'd also say to the benefit of Corus and the other content providers, Alt TV, of course, drives subscribers in a different way, but provides additional eyeballs for advertising for their models. And that's part of what we hope will ultimately benefit all the content providers in Canada, not just Bell Media.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank
you. I don't believe there's any further questions.
There are no further questions.
Okay, great. So with that, thank you all for your participation this morning. And as usual, I'll be available throughout the day for clarifications and follow-up. So thanks again and have a great one.
Thank you. The conference has now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time. And thank you for your participation.